Christoph Gattringer, and he's going to tell us about self-dual U1 lattice field theory with a theta term. So thanks.
Is this switched on? Yes, sounds good. Yeah, I would like to thank the organizers for inviting me here. It's an opportunity after many months of only giving online talks to finally speak in front of an audience. I think it's an experience many of us share. And I'll be talking about work I did together with my PhD student, Maria Anosova, Nabil Iqbal, and Tim Suleiman Basic, starting out with a paper from 3 years ago, where in a very abstract form, the ideas were initially formulated, and then it took us 2 years to work out the details, and finally get our hands dirty and also do some numerical simulations. And I will talk about self-dual U1 lattice field theories with a theta term. Let me begin with a little bit of motivation. We all know that duality, even self-duality, are powerful tools in quantum field theory. And then it's an interesting challenge to put self-dual gauge theories on the lattice. And to our knowledge, this is the first example where this was done really exactly keeping the self-duality precisely. So what are the obstacles? So standard U1 lattice gauge theory, say in the Wilson formulation, has discretization artifacts, of course, but they take the form of magnetic monopoles, and there is no matching electric charges. And if you want to implement duality, self-duality, then of course you have a mismatch, and this problem has to be overcome. So we need to remove these artificial lattice artifacts, these monopoles. And in this project, we address and solve this problem of writing down a self-dual lattice discretization of U1 lattice gauge theory with a theta term. And there's various ingredients in the construction. So one is to use the Villain action in a generalized form, where we add constraints on the Villain variables, which remove exactly this problem, namely the monopoles. And then you can already write down a self-dual U1 lattice gauge theory, but this monopole-free formulation allows you to do more things. In particular, you can identify a very elegant theta term, a topological term, and again try to make it self-dual with this theta term in place, and then you learn something interesting, that suddenly your action becomes non-ultralocal. So this means your action starts to spread out over the lattice with exponentially decaying coefficients. So it still has a proper continuum limit, but it's not ultra-local. And there is already a first question. You want to throw the microphone? Or bring it?
Just to make sure some small things. So by self-duality, you mean SEM duality?
Sorry, I didn't understand it acoustically with them.
By self-duality, do you mean the electromagnetic duality in 3+1 dimensional U1 gauge theory?
Yes.
That's supposed to be anomalous.
Yeah, you will see how it works. So I will address these questions.
Yeah. Thanks.
And then in a further generalization step, we couple electrically and magnetically charged matter. And again, doing this in a self-dual way, and then we numerically study spontaneous breaking of the self-duality as a function of the metacoupling. So this is part of the motivation. So let me try to come to the details. So I first try to walk you through this Villain formulation. So you write down a path integral where you have the standard exponent f mu nu for the action. And this f mu nu has an exterior derivative of a link-based field on the lattice. So this is the usual sum around the plaquette with the minus signs to make the orientation right. And then the field strength is given by this exterior derivative plus 2π times an integer, the so-called Villain variables, which we assign to the plaquettes of the lattice. I will discuss in a second why these are necessary. And then you have a path integral measure, which is an integral over the electric gauge fields dA normalized by 2π. They're integrated from minus pi to plus pi. And then you have a sum over all possible configurations of these plaquette-based link, plaquette variables, these Villeneuve variables. So why do we need those? Ultimately, we are interested in coupling also meta fields, and meta fields are being coupled with link variables, which are group valued. So they are simply the exponential of our gauge fields. And it's clear that this parametrization of the link variables is invariant under shifts. So if you shift this A by multiples of 2 pi, where k is some integer, then obviously you get the same u1 element ux mu. What happens if you apply the exterior derivative to these shifted gauge fields? Then, of course, you pick up an extra term, which is 2 pi times the exterior derivative on this shift variables k. And you want to get rid of this ambiguity in your formulation. So you sum over these Villeneuve variables. They are multiplied with pi, 2 pi here. So they simply eat up this ambiguity, eats up these shifts. And then there's an interesting observation. So again, I write here the key formulas. Under the shifts, we get these extra terms. And as I said, we can use these Villeneuve variables to eat up these shifts. But then there's something interesting. If you look at the shifts, they have the structure of an exterior derivative. So since we know that the exterior derivative is nilpotent, we know that these shifts, they have a particular structure. Namely, if you apply another exterior derivative on this contribution of the shifts, you get zero. This means we don't need the most general configurations of these Villeneuve variables, but we can impose an additional constraint. Namely, we can impose a closeness constraint, namely that the exterior derivative of our Villeneuve variables vanishes. This is still good enough because also our contributions, which we want to eat up, have the same property. So we can simply add this constraint. For completeness, it's not important unless you want to work through it. I also have the definition.
Sorry, can I ask something?
Oh.
Hello?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, okay, great. So, so my understanding is that for lattice support for U1 gauge theory in 3 plus 1D, if you remove the monopole, then there are two U1 one-form symmetries, electric and magnetic one-form symmetries, and they are, there's a Terhoeft anomaly for that, which actually would, normally it would mean that there's no lattice realization of this system. So I don't know what I mean. Is there a loophole here which I'm not getting, or?
It was very difficult to understand acoustically your question. So you were talking about the anomalies, or?
Yes, right. So it's just, well, they should. So when you remove monopole, then actually they say one-form electric symmetry and a one-form magnetic symmetry, and there should be a Terhoeft anomaly for these two symmetries. It's just like for 1+1D, when you have both U1 and the axial U1,
uh-huh.
Then they say anomaly. So anomaly usually means that actually the system cannot be realized on the lattice. So I'm confused what's going on here.
So I'm afraid I cannot answer this question. Maybe let's go through the construction and then we look at your question again in a different form. Okay.
Sure. We can.
Let's try that. Okay. So for completeness, I have the definitions of the exterior derivative, which is just the sum of the boundaries of the cell, of the R cell, of course, taking into account the orientation of the elements. And the divergence operator is the difference of the opposite boundaries of the cell. But I'm not going to use this. Good. So the theory which we want to look at has now the form of sum over the Villeneuve variables, integral over the gauge potential, And we put in place for every cube of the lattice that this closeness constraint is being informed. So this delta here is a Kronecker delta, which puts this integer combination of the V-Lun variables equal to zero. And then we have the weight factor as before. Yes?
So I can think of your constraint as basically a flatness constraint on
exactly,
the field strength once you gauge the k's, right? Or
yes.
The one forms.
Yes, it's right. Correct.
Yeah, so that's why you're getting rid of the monopoles, because you're putting
exactly,
a flatness condition.
Good. So this is the basic setting for a modified measure in this V-Lun formulation. We simply throw in those constraints. Good. This is the starting point, and now we can explore this idea a little bit further. So the first step is we identify a topological charge term, and then we can add it here in the form of a theta term. Let's first look at a topological charge term. Topological charge here is a discretization of the usual FF dual. So here you see F, the epsilon tensor, and here you see a second F. But there are some subtleties, namely that the lattice root side of the field strength contribution here is shifted by sigma and rho, the two indices that you sum over with the epsilon tensor. And in addition, you can allow for shifts in the diagonal of the hypercube multiply them with an arbitrary integer. So I'm defining not only a single lattice discretization of the topological charge, but a whole family. And we will see that this is needed for the construction of the self-dual theory. Okay, so what are properties of this family of topological charges? Say it again? At the moment, it's local, but I can correlate an F and an F dual, which are shifted away from each other. And as a matter of fact, as we will later see, for the self-dual theory, I will need a superposition of many of these family members in this definition. And there are various ways of doing that, but in the end, it will always turn out for self-duality. You cannot have it ultra-local, but we will need this superposition. Very similar to, and this you know, of course, very well, lattice discretization of chiral fermions. Similar structure we find here. Good. I'm only going to talk about U1, unfortunately, otherwise, yeah. Good, only U1. So you can show that it's algebra using properties of these exterior derivatives, but essentially it's algebra, that this Q of F is an integer which is independent of the parameter K. So in particular, the dependence on the exterior derivative here cancels out. And in addition, you can show that the result for the topological charge depends only on the harmonics of the Hodge decomposition. Of the V-Lun variables. So here you have the Hodge decomposition. You don't have a divergence contribution because they have to obey the closeness condition. So the Hodge decomposition takes this form. And the harmonics, you can parameterize them in different ways. This is one way to do it. It's a sum of the plaquettes perpendicular to the mu nu direction with an overall coefficient. And you can easily see that this has also vanishing exterior derivative. And then you work out the dependence on this Hodge decomposition. You find that the topological term only depends on the harmonics, which you, of course, expect. And you can show that this is an integer. So this is the definition and properties of this topological charge family. So then you can start doing a little bit of physics with this construction. So I'm I mentioned already, and Simon also stressed that this is clear. This is the absence of monopoles. But then you can play a little bit, because you should also see the so-called Witten effect. So if you now place a monopole with a minimal magnetic charge, 2 pi, then you should see that via this topological term, you receive an electric charge Q, which is given by theta divided by 2 pi. And in order to check that, there's various ways of checking this. This is maybe the simplest one, but you can also do a loop of monopole. Here I'm just relaxing the constraint at a single cube. So for simplicity reason, I gave it this coordinate x0 shifted in this direction, and then I'll allow for one non-vanishing cube where this constraint is violated. You insert this into the definition of your Q, you work it out, and you get the additional contribution from this cube. And you see you have an A and a shifted A, again by this shift parameter S, divided by 2. So this is a factor A. The prefactor theta over 2 pi is the electric charge which you identify. So we see that our construction of the topological term gives rise to the expected Witten effect. Good. So we have found an interesting structure, and as I will now try to convince you, is that this really allows for self-duality. And first we had to develop a proper way of handling this problem, because we tried various variants, and then we figured out, okay, this has to be something non-local, and I'm already introducing the structure which we identified without doing all the detours which we did in coming up with this construction. So I'm writing both the action and the topological term. Both of them are quadratic in the field strength. I write them in the exponent here in this quadratic form. And we introduce a kernel K, and this kernel K, maybe first look at this structure here inside the square bracket. There you have a term where simply rho is set to mu with this Kronecker, delta nu is set to sigma. We put x and y at the same place, so this is the f mu nu term. Then you identify a second term. And here we have an epsilon mu nu rho sigma. So clearly, if you insert this structure here, you come up with the F dual. I already told you that in this family, or in our construction, you have to have these shifts by rho and sigma. And we use 2 members of this family. So here you see an additional shift by 1 unit in this diagonal of the hypercube. So this combination, you can also do it without this shift, but this has a slightly more symmetry. And we make an ansatz where we have here a coefficient gamma. Of course, this gamma at some point will be related to the topological angle theta. We have an overall factor beta. And then you can ask, where does the non-locality come from? This comes from this inverse Helmholtz type operator here. And where does this Helmholtz operator come from? We are interested in self-duality. And as I will show, this is essentially related to solving this Gaussian integral, which we will do with a Poisson resummation technique. And then in the end, you want to have the 2 forms equivalent in this Poisson resummation. You need the inverse of this kernel. So you want to identify a structure where the kernel and the inverse kernel have the same form, essentially. And this is relatively easy to work out. So if you multiply this square bracket with the second square bracket with a minus here, you get exactly this Helmholtz operator. You work out a little bit, and the mixed term cancels, and you get exactly this Helmholtz operator. So if you multiply the inverse square root of the Helmholtz operator, then you get something where you have the original kernel and the inverse kernel. They are similar with the difference that here the minus sign has flipped, which you expect anyway, because in the duality transformation, you expect the topological term to switch its sign. And this brings in the non-locality, because if you invert this, then for example, with a power series, if you iterate this operator, it will create further and further steps on your lattice. So this action, which we look at here, is smeared out over the lattice, but you can show that the coefficients decay exponentially. So it's a healthy lattice field theory, which we know from similar examples I mentioned already, the chiral fermion discretization on the lattice. And then in the end, you identify the overall factor such that it matches 1 over e squared, which is the prefactor of the f squared term. And you identify the gamma in a proper way such that the prefactor of the topological term is essentially given by I times theta times an integer. And this can be worked out. And you see in leading order, you have the expected 1 over epsilon squared. But because of the square root of this Helmholtz operator, you have this correction term here. So now we have constructed such a kernel. And then we can quickly work through a quite standard construction of switching to the dual formulation. The first step is we write. Sure.
So you have written down the lattice theory. And if I was doing QED, I would know how to go to the continuum, what I have to do to the lattice coupling E.
Yeah.
Now I'm confused whether I should take, why should I take E to zero still?
Because if you look, okay, I had to think a second. You have the overall factor beta, and you have a 1 over e squared here. And here you have an e squared in front of the second term. And this couples this 1 over e squared, so it's fine. See what I mean? So you have here the overall factor beta, and this beta also multiplies the gamma. And the gamma has an e squared, and the beta has a 1 over e squared, and they cancel. So that the second term, I guess this was the motivation of your question, why is there an e squared here?
No, my question is, it looks like I can as well take e to infinite and take a continuum limit.
No. Why would you do that? Infinitely
it
strong
like
coupling?
I can do it. That's what's confusing me.
I don't know. You get a weird theory. I mean, it's important to have the opposite limit here. I don't know. We didn't think about discussing e to infinity. So I can only scratch my head on this suggestion. Anyway, but what's that? No, what is important is that this e squared here is removed, and this happens via the prefactor, which is multiplied. And it's like 1 over e squared. Otherwise, you would somehow lose the topological term. It is not the case. OK? Good. So let me try to run you through the duality transformation. So the first step is we write these constraints using the integral representation of Kronecker deltas, Lagrange multipliers, which are being identified. The constraint lives on the cube of the lattice. So these Lagrange multipliers also live on the cubes of the lattice or on the links of the dual lattice. And this is why we refer to them as magnetic gauge field. And you will see in the duality transformation that the electric and this magnetic gauge field simply exchange their roles. So at the moment, this is just a Lagrange multiplier to implement the constraint. And then since this F is simply the N plus an exact form. I can replace the n by the f. I have to take out this factor 2 pi here, but this is an exact identity. And then I can use a partial integration, which also works for this discrete differential calculus. And I can roll over the exterior derivative to the other side. It becomes the divergence operator. And then I can insert back the constraint in this form. And I have already spelled out the f as the combination of dA plus 2 pi n. So here's our quadratic form. And then we have the same object appearing here, dA plus 2 pi n. And then you can solve essentially this Gaussian integral with a generalized Poisson representation. So you switch to a Fourier representation of the original object. The corresponding Fourier transforms can be computed. They are simply Gaussian integrals. And you end up with an exact transformation where you pick up a coefficient, which I don't show, but it's under control. And you have the inverse of the prefactor. This is this beta Tweedle, which is 1 over 4 pi squared beta. You have, I mentioned, the Fourier modes of this object, which are these plaquette occupation numbers. You have to sum over all Fourier modes to represent the result. And we have also generated a linear term in the exponent, which now depends on the exterior derivative of this electric gauge field. So let me summarize a little bit what I have done. So for example, I can now do various things with this object. So I can integrate out now the original gauge fields. They will generate the divergence operator. Why is this the case? Because before integrating them out, I have to do partial integration again. I roll this over and I get the divergence of these plaquette occupation numbers. I can integrate out the A's now and I get a new constraint. The plaquette occupation numbers, they have to obey this zero divergence condition, so they have to form closed surfaces. And this is, I guess, a structure that is known to many of you because this is a worksheet representation of abelian gauge theories on the lattice, very useful for simulations. If you look at the structure, it looks almost as before. So we have replaced the K by the K inverse, but they are similar in their form. The original Villain variables are replaced by the plaquette occupation numbers. The only remaining problem is that we have replaced the exterior derivative by the divergence operator. However, we can switch to the dual lattice. So identify the objects on the lattice with their corresponding objects on the dual lattice. And this converts the divergence operator into an exterior derivative also here. And it converts the zero divergence condition into the closedness condition. And then you get exactly the same form. And we have established self-duality. So what have we achieved? We have started from the original formulation where we have the gauge field action, this F squared term. We have our topological term. Now, I don't write the explicit expressions, but these are the smeared out objects. And we have in place these closeness constraints. The dual form, the electric gauge field was replaced by the magnetic gauge field living on the dual lattice. The Villain variables are replaced by the duals of these plaquette occupation numbers, which now obey the constraints. And we have, of course, changed the coupling. We had a charge E here and a topological angle theta, which is replaced by E Tweedle and theta Tweedle. Now I omitted this step, but again, now on the dual side, you have to do the matching, and then you find that the 1 over E squared transforms over the 1 E Tweedle squared, by multiplication with this F, and the topological angle is also transformed by this multiplication with F, and there's an additional minus sign as expected. And this F you can express in this form. You do a consistency check. Repeating the duality transformation should lead you back, and it does, because E twiddle twiddle is equal to E, theta twiddle twiddle is equal to theta, and also this overall factor C has to be such that it exactly cancels when you multiply it with its dual, so C times C twiddle is equal to 1. So we have implemented this duality transformation and constructed a self-dual theory. Now we can...
Christoph, I didn't quite follow your logic in detail. Why did you need the dn condition? Where in the derivation did you use the fact that the dn was 0?
The dn
was it in the Poisson resummation formula?
It was in the Poisson resummation formula. So you need it. So here we start out, let me see. Sorry, I have to go back one more step. So here, this is the extra term in the exponent. If you do the Gaussian integral, this object will appear on the other side of the transformation in the quadratic form. Otherwise, this does not make sense. Otherwise, the topological term doesn't have the proper interpretation. So this is really necessary. Without these constraints, you can't do this construction. How many? Five? I thought 30 minutes. This was too good to be true. Okay. So let's play a little bit with the symmetry structures which have been identified before. Let's see if we can see them also on the lattice. So we have the self-dual symmetry where E gets replaced by E twiddle, theta gets replaced by theta twiddle. But there's a second symmetry. Since our topological term is an exact integer, also the shift of theta by multiples of 2 pi is an exact symmetry. So we do one shift by minus 2 pi. And those two transformations jointly form a group of symmetries. You want to discuss now, or let me go through this transparency, so, and then I have to stop anyway. I won't be able to show numerical results, and then we can discuss. So, you can define the so-called modular parameter, which is I times 2 pi over E squared minus theta divided by 2 pi. And then it's easy to see if you work out the definitions of this transformation that the self-dual symmetry maps T to T twiddle, which is minus 1 over T. And the shift symmetry maps T to T plus 1. And then you can identify these transformations as an implementation of the group SL2 set on represented by the complex numbers. And the general transformation which you have is tau going to some matrix acting on tau. And this matrix is in SL2C, so it has integer entries and it has determinant equal to 1. And the transformation is defined like that. And then you can see that S and T correspond to the matrix MS, which off-diagonal elements 1 and minus 1, 0 on the diagonal, and the matrix MT for the shift symmetry given by this matrix. And together they generate all of SL2C. And then you can work out the details. You find that you have equivalent families of theories related by different transformations M. Maybe let me conclude with this slide here. So you have mappings between families of theories, which you can look at in the complex plane of the tau parameter. So the real part was minus theta divided by 2 pi. The imaginary part is 2 pi divided by e squared. So on the vertical axis, you have a family of theories which do not have a sign problem. And you can relate the physics of this family by applying various transformations of the SL2C type and map it onto other families. And here is a plot where you see how different matrices map to other families. And you can continue. I don't have time to show this, unfortunately. You can couple matter to this theory. You can either couple electric and magnetic matter, but you can also couple dionic matter. And with dionic matter is particularly interesting because then you can switch from different dionic fields with a different electric and magnetic charge, which is also getting modified by these matrices. So you can relate theories with different charge content on the real axis to theories that have a non-vanishing theta. And I think this is a good moment to stop. And I read the first half of my summary. Within the Villain formulation, imposing this closeness condition, we remove the monopoles and we see that self-duality becomes possible. Based on the closeness constraint, we can define this topological charge and couple a theta term, and then we can generalize this structure to a non-ultra-local form and construct self-dual U1 lattice gauge theory with a theta term, and we can explore this SL2C symmetry to relate different theories. And the rest would have been about coupling matter and some simulation which we did with one flavor of electric and one flavor of magnetic charge using a certain world line formulation. And we see that indeed the matter couplings can lead to spontaneous breaking of this self-dual symmetry. Here I stop.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thanks. It's very interesting. Do you have a Hamiltonian formulation of this?
No. Something which we have not thought about. So if I say no, the answer is simply I don't know. Uh-huh. We have not tried.
I'm asking because if you do, then this can be viewed as an example in the language of condensed matter. It can be viewed as an example of a quantum spin liquid kind of beyond the so-called Parton construction.
Uh-huh.
Because this EM duality kind of forbids a Parton construction. Another question is, you said that there's a T-duality symmetry which shifts theta only by 2 pi. I think if this is true, it means your U1 gauge field is secretly a spin C connection, but not a U1 gauge field.
So say it again. You say that if we shift by 2 pi?
Yeah, if you shift theta by 4 pi, that's a symmetry. Then it means the U1 gauge field is a U1 gauge field. If you shift by 2 pi, it's already a symmetry. It means the U1 gauge field is actually a spin C connection, meaning the charge to be consistent, the charge has to be fermionic. I don't know if you can see it from this construction.
So what we see is that in this construction, you also have charge conjugation implemented. This is part of it. And I think the relation was that this is that S is related to C squared.
Yeah.
This we are aware of. We even studied this numerically, whether this C symmetry can become broken independently. Is a little bit hard to figure out, but our numerical results indicate that this is not the case. I don't know if this answers your question, but this is actually all I can say about that.
I think I'm asking something more basic. So can you go back to the slide on SL2Z symmetry?
Yes, hang on a second.
So the 3+1 dimensional U1 gauge theory has SL2Z symmetry and also a bunch of one-form symmetries. And in fancy language, they combine into a two-group structure. They have some anomalies. I think this is very interesting, but one thing that I'm not really understanding here is how the anomaly is compatible with this construction and so on. But here is just a specific thing on this slide. You said this, there's a T symmetry which shifts theta by 2 pi.
Yeah.
suppose our U1 gauge theory is coupled to some bosonic charge matter. Then you know if you shift theta by 2 pi, the theory will become different. But now, if I understand correctly, it seems that you are saying the theory is the same. This means the U1 gauge field is coupled to a fermionic matter.
No, it's not that simple. Because the charge of one of the fields, I forgot which one, I think the magnetic one, gets multiplied with a minus sign.
Under what?
Under the duality transformation.
Which duality transformation?
The one which I showed you here, but I didn't talk about the matter content. But if you look at the matter content, then you see that you pick up an extra minus sign for one of the charges. You don't see it in the pure gauge theory, but if you couple matter, you see it. If you want to, we can discuss this in more detail. I don't have the equations here, but on the paper I have them. Of course, we can look at this together.
Yeah, thanks.
But you're right. There is a hidden charge conjugation in this construction.
Got a question from Simon.
It's a very simple-minded question, Christoph. Your topological charge is integer-valued, but this is, you know, starting from abelian gauge fields. So I don't understand. There doesn't seem to be a semi-classical reason for integer-valued topological charge.
No, it's just a boundary effect, essentially. So you only have these harmonic contributions, which, if you map them to the dual lattice, are sheets covering some two-dimensional submanifolds across the periodic boundary conditions. So there's nothing dynamical, interesting going on in U1 topological terms. You look puzzled.
That's probably because it's late and I am puzzled. But
in case you come to Vienna in 2 weeks, in 3 weeks, so we can discuss this in more detail.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. Let's discuss this in Vienna when I'm back.
I mean, U1 topological terms are not particularly interesting, but so it's more an exercise in taking into account properly boundary terms.
Well, yeah, but you say that, but you've just constructed a self-duality on the in which it plays an integral role. I don't. So,
yeah.
Sure. Surely that makes it interesting. Anyway.
I have a question. So you didn't get to talk about this, but maybe you can say it quickly. So you mentioned there's a phase after you couple to the matter where the Z2, the self-dual symmetry is spontaneously broken. May I just ask for that spontaneously self-duality broken phase, is the U1 gauge field confined or not? Like, is it Higgs? Or?
So there's a conjectured phase diagram. Maybe let me switch to that. So this is quite conjectured, but I can show you what we looked at. So here I'm plotting the logarithm of 2 pi beta. Okay, so if you go to the dual beta, beta goes to 1 over 4 pi squared beta. So you see that beta equal 1 over 2 pi is the self-dual point where this logarithm vanishes because the argument is 1. And otherwise, expressed in terms of this combination, the duality transformation is just flipping the sign of this logarithm. Okay, so this is perfectly symmetric from top to bottom under this duality. Then I coupled electric and magnetic matter. So this is simply a gauged planar rotator, simplest matter field you can imagine. So it has one parameter because I set the coupling of the electric and the magnetic equal, because then I don't have to interchange the couplings. They're the same anyway. Okay, so we have exact self-duality along this line, beta equal 1 over 2 pi. And then we simply scanned in our numerical simulation along this line as a function of this one parameter. And then we find here as from starting j equal to 0, which is essentially a free photon gas, then as you crank up the coupling, then you find, and we identified that this is a first order endpoint here. From here on, self-duality is broken, and it ends in a Gaussian second order fixed point here in the end.
Okay, so the first one is first order. You mentioned that.
So this is second order. Everything that is blue on the horizontal line, we checked. So we also did cuts through here. We see a very nice textbook first order jump. And everything here, this is conjecture. We don't have clear results on that. So here we're simply trying to analyze the system at infinitely strong coupling, which via duality maps to beta equals zero. You expect a first order transition here between a Higgs phase and a Coulomb phase. And we believe that this might extend here as a first order line to this triple point here. But this is speculation, I must admit.
I just want to make sure the triple point is also first order, you mentioned?
Yes. So okay. this we checked. I can show you the Binder cumulants. They are quite convincing. So here you see the minima. This seems to be a first order transition. Okay. We're quite sure about that.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Can you say again so what is the nature of that red point again? That's a second order transition point.
You're talking about this point here?
Yeah, right, all right. So what is the field theory for this point?
I couldn't, can you say it again? It's really hard to hear.
Yeah, so what is the field theory for that red point?
What is the theory?
The field theory.
Yeah.
So the symmetry breaking pattern should be that of 4D Ising. And this is also the critical exponents which we determined.
Yeah, but they're also gapless gauge field and a gapless matter field, right? So they are, you know, how are they coupled? Or they're just decoupled completely?
This I don't know. So we just determined numerically the critical exponents. The results are very close to 4D Ising, and further interpretation I don't have.
The gauge field is okay. Higgs, right?
Here? No. On the blue line?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. So entire phase actually is has a gapped gauge field. Okay. Cool. Okay. Then the only thing critical is Ising. Sorry about that. Yeah. Right. The only thing critical is Ising. Okay. Good.
Okay. This is a good point. We did not look at this, but I can't exclude it. Yeah, I understand, but we didn't look at this.
Actually, that kind of blends into my question, which was, looks like most of the construction you went through would probably generalize to any cyclic group, any Zn, right?
Yes.
Have you tried to do that?
No, but it's straightforward. So all the tools we have used in other spin models with dualities, I completely agree. I think this is a pattern that you can apply to any abelian gauge group.
Right, and when you couple matter, that might be very interesting from the point of view of some of these discrete anomalies for Zn's.
Maybe we can discuss this. I'm always happy to get some inspiration. But from a pen and paper point of view, this is the pattern for all the abelian gauge groups, I can imagine.
Okay, let's thank Christoph again.
Thank you.